This is DiPietro, Canty and Rothenberg.
I used to be quite the sailor. Let me tell you something. Me and that small sailboat, I was cat-like in that thing and making turns. I was bouncing around. There are things going on there. You don't even know what's happening.
Just really digging into those turns.
Absolutely. I knew what I was doing back then. I don't know what the hell I'm doing now. I've been on a sailboat in years. But, yeah, me and the sunfish were one.
Just back in camp.
That is such a random fun fact from Carlin.
This one time in camp, I won a regatta.
How random is that?
Just the fact that they called it a regatta in camp.
It's amazing.
On the lake in Vermont, it was fantastic. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. It's Carlin in for Dave on DCR here on 98.7 ESPN. All right, the hiring of Steve Nash yesterday. Chris, the story broke during the show. We had an awful lot of time to discuss it, but even more time to think about it in the 24 hours since. So, you know, overall, I still am of the thought that this was a good hire for the Nets because he is somebody that, as a star player in the league, will understand the star player mentality. He's obviously got a good relationship with Durant, and he is somebody that is also a very, very good basketball mind. And I think this has got a real good chance to succeed, especially since they brought Jacques Vaughn back.
Well, and here's the thing, right, Carlin? I mean, just because he doesn't have any previous coaching experience doesn't mean that he can't do the job. We've seen plenty of times the head coaches that don't have prior coaching experience turn out to be okay. Steve Kerr turned out to be okay out there in Golden State. So, I mean, we've seen it before. Mark Jackson, when he got the job in Golden State, turned out to be okay, built that thing into a playoff team every year. So, I mean, it doesn't mean that he can't do the job. It doesn't mean that he can't help KD and Kyrie Irving deliver a championship to Brooklyn. And when you start looking at the connections that Steve Nash has to the organization, we talked about the relationship that Nash and KD have. What I didn't realize yesterday when they made the announcement is that Steve Nash and Sean Marks were teammates out there in the Phoenix Suns way back when. So, I mean, the fact that the general manager has that prior existing relationship where he and Steve Nash were teammates, I mean, I guess there's a certain comfort level that comes along with that, and seeing his basketball acumen up close and personal, I think that that's probably what led Sean Marks to go in that direction and choosing a candidate that could command the respect of his best player, and then it's somebody that he's always had respect and admiration for and watching him up close. I mean, Steve Nash has the credentials as a player. He's a two-time MVP and 7 times All-NBA. So it's not like Steve Nash doesn't know basketball. I think that there's no question when you start peeling back the layers on this thing that Steve Nash feels like a really good fit for the Brooklyn Nets.
I mean, it comes down to, in the quicker you realize this, the better off you usually are, is that, I mean, it's a relationship business. I mean, that's a lot of how this works. And I think you saw that with what the Knicks did with Tom Thibodeau, his relationship with Leon Rose, and he can trust, you know, they can trust each other and they're on the same page. And I think the same thing can be said about, you know, Sean Marks and his relationship with Steve Nash. We didn't hear about it, but apparently this was something that they've been working on, you know, trying to talk him into actually, you know, wanting to coach. And to Chris's point, which I think the most important thing is, you know, having somebody that the second they step into that locker room, they command the respect of everyone inside of it. It doesn't matter how good you are, you're Kevin Durant, you're Kyrie Irving. I mean, you're talking about a back-to-back MVP who's a basketball savant. Like, the credentials are there. So he'll have instant credibility. I think it's tough to fully grade the move until you find out, outside of Jacques Vaughn, who else is going to be on the staff. Because, I mean, he can have great relationships and everything else. You'll judge him on, you know, big moments in the postseason, because that's what the expectation for this team is. You know, how does he do up against, you know, a Brad Stevens or, you know, and Eric Spoelstra. I mean, the East has some really good coaches.
Really good coaches, yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's how you'll judge it. And if he's got the right people around him to help him with those things, then, I mean, there's plenty of talent on that Brooklyn Nets team. If KD comes back healthy and Kyrie's healthy, that, I mean, they should find ways to win basketball games. That should be one of the best teams in the East.
Yeah, I mean, from a talent standpoint, it should be the best team in the East, wouldn't you say?
I
mean, Boston
so.
Is probably right there, but I mean, I would have to give the edge to KD and Kyrie. I mean, you're talking about having two All-NBA guys on your team and a guy that's a top five player when he's healthy. I don't know. I look at them and say, yeah, this probably should be the team to beat in the Eastern Conference coming into next year.
The only wild card is Kyrie, because I think you said the same thing about Boston, and that was an abject failure. It was,
but we both said that it's probably a little bit of a different dynamic when Kyrie has somebody in the locker room that he has to defer to, because there's a player that's clearly better than him. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like when Kyrie was in Cleveland with LeBron, okay, Kyrie as a Robin or a 1B, it works because he's not the guy that's in a leadership position in the locker room.
All right, so
with KD in the Nets locker room, I think it's going to be a different version of Kyrie Irving from the one that we saw in Boston with Brad Stevens.
The only thing I'll ask about it, though, and I was thinking about this last night, Chris, is for me the problem there is it did happen. They won a championship in Cleveland, but it did happen with him deferring that at some point he didn't want to defer anymore, and it's LeBron. You know, like he actually created a bit of a situation with him and LeBron in Cleveland. So is it unfair to just expect that at some point you're going to have to deal with that at some point here, given the personality of Kyrie?
Well, a couple of things there. First of all, Kyrie was really, really young. And I think Kyrie said that at one point when he was in Boston, he apologized to LeBron James because he realized how heavy the burden is of being the star player and having all of the responsibilities that come along with it. So I think there's a lesson that was learned in there for Kyrie. And then the second part of that is Kyrie chose to team up with Kevin Durant. The two of them are friends. So, I mean, the fact that he chose to be a part of it, he wanted KD to come with him to Brooklyn. I just think it's a different situation than what we saw in Cleveland when LeBron came back from Miami. And the fact is LeBron James casts a much bigger shadow than Kevin Durant does. So I think that it's a little bit of a different situation. It's apples and oranges in comparing those two situations.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I don't know. I don't think anyone knows if – I mean, you said that Kyrie, I mean, from everything we heard, called LeBron and said, you know, it's a whole hell of a lot harder than it looks what you're able to do, like being that kind of leader. I mean, we're not sure – are we sure that Kevin Durant is capable of doing what LeBron does? I don't know if we know that yet.
I don't know if we know that Kevin Durant is capable of being that kind of leader, but I think Kevin Durant, in terms of commanding that respect from his peers and from Kyrie Irving in particular, I think he absolutely is that guy. I mean, game recognized game, like he knows that Kevin Durant is a better player than he is.
I understand what you're saying, and it makes perfect sense. But I also know that one of the big reasons why Kevin Durant got frustrated in OKC was because he didn't want to have to be the guy to tell Russ, give me the ball. He wanted his coach to do that.
And maybe that's why he pushed for the Steve Nash hire. Maybe that's exactly why Kevin Durant wanted Steve Nash to come alongside him, because Steve Nash expressed to Kevin Durant that he understood those frustrations and he knows what he's looking for. Maybe Kevin Durant is saying, okay, if I ask Steve Nash to come over and be the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, maybe he can be the one to deliver the message from me about what I want my teammates to do, and Kyrie Irving in particular. Former point guard, so maybe he has the ability to be able to communicate and convey those messages to Kyrie in a way that doesn't offend the player and actually gets him to buy into the philosophy and team concept and ultimately what Kevin Durant wants.
I just get concerned when you put this much power in the hands of the players.
But isn't that the way of the world in today's NBA, though, Rico?
Yeah.
I get it, but not everyone deserves that right.
Like, I agree
think
with
LeBron
that.
James
I agree
deserves
that.
That right. I don't think everyone does. Like you may
Jimmy
think,
Butler
you know,
deserves that right.
Well, Jimmy Butler's a dog. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. He deserves that right. Based on what he does and how he works, he's earned that. I see what you're saying. From a leadership standpoint, not every player can handle having that amount of responsibility and influence in an organization.
Like, I think LeBron James, I legitimately think that LeBron James would be better off with a coach that is actually willing to be the coach and coach him. Like, to take that part of it off of his plate.
like what he had in Miami with Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra.
Exactly. Like, yeah. I think it was it's to Tom Brady's benefit that he has Bill Belichick. Like, I always go back to the football life of Troy Aikman. I mean, I think you guys have both seen that.
Oh, like, yeah, I remember this, yeah. I remember.
You know exactly what I'm talking about, how pissed he was. Once they got rid of Jimmy Johnson, like, how upset he was. He's like, I can't be the bad guy every single day. That can't be my job.
Oh, yeah, Barry Switzer? Yep. Barry Switzer as the bad babysitter?
Yep.
It just feels like Brooklyn has went. Brooklyn did such a good job of building this from the ground up, and they were so focused on development and Sean Marks making the right moves. And now it just feels like they're just, you know, throw all that out the window, and now whatever, you know, KD and Kyrie want, that's what we're going
to
do.
But it's almost a chance you got to take if you want to compete at a championship level, though. Because without one of those guys, you got no shot, man. Like in today's NBA, if you don't have one of those top guys, it's going to be hard for you to get to the finals. Now, I think the Miami Heat will be that outlier this year, the way that they're playing. But, I mean, unless you got a guy that's a top 10 guy, I mean, you don't have the margin for error in terms of being able to navigate your way through the regular season and work through the playoffs in order to get to the championship rounds. It's too hard to do in today's game.
It's a reality in today's game that you have to not only do that, but allow some of those guys to be, you know, pseudo in charge of the team in a lot of ways.
But you have to have the right guy to play with. Yeah, but Carlin, you have to have the right guy in charge. Like Jim, that's who Jimmy Butler is. Jimmy Butler's a dog, right? Eh. And the guys on that team follow Jimmy Butler. LeBron James is the unquestioned leader of his team. Like,
you don't want it to be a Joel Embiid. You don't want it to be.
No, exactly right. But even the James Harden thing. Like, we all sitting here saying, okay, James Harden should have the ball in his hands. But he defers to Russell Westbrook because that's Russell. Russell Westbrook has the bigger personality, and Mike D'Antoni just has no interest in, like, he just stays out of it. Well, what do you guys want to do? Well, I guess Russ wants to take the ball. Okay, that's what you guys will do. Like, I don't know if KD, I know Kyrie's not. I don't know if KD's that guy or not. It's going to be willing to step up and be the kind of leader that Kyrie needs and that team's going to need.
I do think we have to pump the brakes a little bit on
because he
Jimmy
seems
Butler.
Real sensitive. Every great leader I know is not a sensitive person.
Well, I think that's very fair. I absolutely. I mean, it's hard. He's got burner accounts and he still claps back and he admits that he has burner accounts clapping back at people. Like, what's the point?
Apparently, he didn't get along with Steve Kerr. Right, I don't know, how is that possible?
Yeah.
Does he want to be coached or not? Because if he doesn't want to be coached, I mean, I don't care who you hire as the head coach.
Well,
you'd be at the mercy how well he plays.
But when you have that kind of talent, this is an unfortunate, and I hesitate to even say risk, but an unfortunate pseudo-risk, so to speak, in that you have to give that opportunity when you have the opportunity, or we have to give that opportunity to the player of Durant's level when we all sit here and call him the second best player in the league.
You see to control the team to him and Kyrie is what you've done.
Yeah, and you're going to have to live with that. I mean,
yeah, that's the only option. Way you're going to have a chance to compete for a championship. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, when's the last time you talked about a championship team without a top 10 player?
You don't. That's all there is to it. Here's Jason in Vermont on KD and Kyrie. Jason, what's going on, bud? You're on DCR.
How's it going, guys? I just wanted to say that I also thought that Kevin and Durant and Kyrie, I think that they're going to do great together. I think that it's really interesting because they both have something to prove. Obviously, Kevin went to Golden State after the 73-9 season, but like, I think that he got so much flack on the internet and everyone saying that he was just a snake. So I think that he really had a chip on his shoulder, and especially after he came back in Game 6 and tore his ruptured Achilles fully, I think that he, in the way he got booed by Toronto's fans, I think that he really has something to prove, and he's going to go out there with a chip on his shoulder and try to prove it.
Listen, I don't disagree with you. I mean, everything, we've had Rich Kleiman on the show, we've seen videos of Kevin Durant. Like, he's going to come back, and he's going to be, maybe he's not 100%, but he's pretty damn close. Like, he'll reassert himself as one of the best players in basketball. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, Kyrie's going to do the same thing. Here's the concern, though, is that, and we're talking about less about the players and more about who they just decided to hire as their head coach. You're seeing it now in some of these games, like the difference between a good head coach and a great head coach and putting his players in positions to have success. Like the play that Nick Nurse drew up that worked and Brad Stevens decided he wanted to go zone. That's Nick Nurse is the best coach, and I mean, gets voted the best coach in the league for a reason. right? Eric Spoelstra's a great coach. You see what they're doing right now in Milwaukee. I think Spoelstra's out-coaching Budenholzer.
Yeah, yes.
And that's what's going to happen, though. Like, you may love Steve Nash. They might have a great, you know, relationship with him, and that's why I say that, you know, his staff is going to be so important, but he's going to be judged on what he does in crucial moments in big-time spots in the postseason, because that's what it's about for Brooklyn, is winning the championship in the next couple of years.
You're absolutely right, especially if we see a healthy Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Like, if those two come back and they show that they're the same guys that they were prior to the injuries, then the reason why Brooklyn doesn't get to the conference finals, it wouldn't be because you don't have the talent. It would be because of the coach. And I think at that point it would be fair to be critical. But right now we're just kind of in a wait-and-see mode because we don't know what this is going to look like. We've never seen Steve Nash coach in the NBA.
Like, what is, like, let me ask you a question, Chris. I mean, you're watching all these games with me. What is Milwaukee doing with Giannis at the moment? Like, we can't get a little bit more creative with Giannis?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the one thing that's going to be tough for Milwaukee, just because their half-court offense hasn't been very good, and the Heat defensively won't allow you to get out in transition. Like, a lot of Milwaukee's offense comes out of transition. Now, I think they started to utilize more pick and rolls with Giannis as the screener and trying to create opportunities that way. But, I mean, it's going to be tough for Milwaukee just because they don't have that guy that can create outside of Giannis. They don't have a playmaker, Rick. In the half-court offense, they don't have a playmaker. I know Chris Middleton is an all-star, but he's a catch-and-shoot guy or a one-dribble-and-shoot guy. He is not a guy that can create for other people. He's not.
He can't create for himself. He can't get to – I mean, you watch what Kawhi did last night. Kawhi can get anywhere on the floor he wants. Ridiculous.
It's amazing.
Hey, by the way, I didn't listen to the whole show yesterday. What was you guys – what were the thoughts on that call, Giannis against Jimmy Butler to end that game?
Oh. I thought it was a fair call. If you're going to call the one with Dragic on Chris Middleton, then you got to call the one with Giannis on Jimmy Butler.
I think that's fair. I hate to see those two calls that late in the game.
But it shouldn't have came down to that, though. The Heat made some bonehead plays at the end of that game.
Yeah, they did.
Like Jimmy Butler just throwing the ball under his own basket. Like, what are you doing? Like, those things can't happen. Like, you just don't see Miami. Those were uncharacteristic mistakes and really, to me, unforced errors on the Miami Heat's part. Now, they were able to get past it, but the game shouldn't have come down to those calls. It really shouldn't have.
I do think
I just hate that. Double zeros, like, that's it. Like, the game is going to end.
Yeah, no, and it's not the way. Yeah, it's not the way the games are meant to end, and I understand.
But Miami outplayed Milwaukee for the most part in that game. I think they led over 45 minutes in that game. So it wasn't like this was a back and forth affair.
Steal
it wasn't.
Yeah, and they didn't.
No, they looked like
the
better team
from them.
Miami's looked like the better team.
I do think we got to pump the brakes a little bit on Jimmy Butler. I know how hard he plays. I know how they follow him, but Jimmy Butler still hasn't been out of the second round yet. So
it looks like he's about to get out of the second round now. And him dropping 40 in game one, 27 in the second half. I mean, you got to give him his respect, Carlin. You do.
No, Carlin, I mean,
he's the heartbeat of that team.
He's been great this year, and he has been the heartbeat of that team. I'm just not going to anoint him on that level yet until he's further along in the postseason.
Yeah, but you're missing the point, though. I mean, Chris and I,
he's
I mean, he dropped 40 in the first game.
Your point is.
No, he dropped 40 in the first game, and he was more passive in the second game, right? Like, offensively, he didn't do nearly as much.
Yeah.
But Chris and I realized the importance of having someone like him inside of that locker room. He did the same thing with Philadelphia and Joel Embiid. And you heard Embiid question whether or not they should have got rid of Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
That was recently.
Yeah.
Well, like a guy like that, just the guy, having a guy like that does something to everyone inside of that locker room. Like you play like, you put your shoulders out a little bit more. You play with a little bit more edge because you got a guy like that inside that locker room that's your leader. It makes a difference, a huge difference.
And then the head coach empowers him to be the leader. I think that's the difference when what we saw with Brett Brown in Philly versus what we're seeing in Eric Spoelstra in Miami with Jimmy Butler. And, Carlin, I don't want you to confuse what I'm saying. I don't think from a talent standpoint Jimmy Butler is a top 10 player. That's not what I'm saying at all.
I know what you're saying.
I'm not looking at it that way. But I'm in terms of what he does, how he produces, and how he gets everybody else to elevate their game, there's something to that. Like Tom Coughlin and Bill Parcells used to say it all the time. The best players don't always make the best team, but the best team always wins. Right now in the Eastern Conference, you have a hard time making an argument about the best team not being Miami in terms of how they play together, especially defensively.
Yeah, I won't argue with that right now. I'm still not going to rule out the Bucks. I know we're all down on the Bucks right now. I'm still not going to rule them out in this series, but listen.
All right.
Okay. No, I'm
you keep
not.
Hanging on.
Well, look, I mean, we're ready to bury the Raptors, and look what happened last night. Fred Van Vliet is running off the court saying, oh, they blanked up, letting us back in.
Do you think the Raptors are going to win in that series against the Celtics?
I'm saying the series isn't over.
But I mean, do you think that the Raptors are going to come from behind and win that series?
I don't think they're. I think people have downplayed the Raptors and they have downplayed the Bucks, and they've wiped out what they did during the regular season.
Carlin, both of those teams. I forget the regular season. That's different basketball. I mean, that's it. They both struggle with the same thing. Is when you get them in a half-court offense, who's the guy? Who is going to be the guy?
They don't have a guy.
They don't have
Pascal
a guy.
Pascal Siakam right is not the guy right now. He's an all-star, but he's not the guy.
And don't start using going back to your experience in camp after you win the regatta. You're down 2-0 in a series at camp, and you came back to win it. Stop.
No, I led pillar to post in that thing. I dominated. It was a dominating performance.
Remember that one time at camp? Oh, I love it.
Listen!
I won a regatta.
It happened! Summer of 85, I believe. I was 13 years old. Turning 13. 800-919-3776. If Camp Norway still existed, it would be on the list up there somewhere. I guarantee you. It was up on the wall. 800-919-3776. It's Carlin in for Dave on DCR 98.7 ESPN with Rick and Chris. Today on ESPN Daily, Wright Thompson brings us his reporting behind the new ESPN podcast series about horse racing, bloodlines, and how the sport has landed in crisis. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. Open lines, we hit the phones next at 800-919-3776. DCR on 98.7 ESPN. DCR on 98.7 ESPN. Carlin in for Dave along with Rick and Chris. Let's get back to the phone. Spike in Jersey next. Spike, what's going on, brother?
Hey, fellas, thanks for a good week of program. Solid stuff. First of all, Rick, on the Chipmunks. You ready? They're just there. They live there. You're never going to get rid of them. Dogs can't catch them. You just got to name them, and once in a while, wave your hand at them. That's all, and they'll be harmless. You're stuck with them. They're harmless creatures.
Yeah, but Spike, here's the issue, Spike. What I'm concerned about is that the one that's currently, using my house as a bed and breakfast is now going to turn around and have babies in the garage.
Well, then you got to go see a vet and have them neutered. I don't know. I don't know what you do. They're kind of almost cute, you know. Listen, on the baseball, Gordon said this morning, and I'll give him a lot of credit. If you look at the way it's set up this year, 1 through 16, and 8 teams make it, and you go to the right-hand column where they give you the percentile of the teams making it, the Yankees have to make it. They're 98%. So, and Detroit's the next team. So they're going to get there, and maybe it's a blessing in disguise, and everyone will come back. If you're a Yankee fan, you're hoping that happens. On the hockey, you got a game 7. It's a shame because it just should have ended, but you got a game 7. And, otherwise, I think the basketball last night on that last play, it was one switch. They did, it was beautifully executed. You're throwing it over a tree, and Lowry had the presence of mind. The first two options, if you watch it closely, I'm sure you did a few times, the second guy, I forget who it was, missed the switch. And that's why he was so open. They must practice that play 500 times a month.
It was Jalen Brown.
Yeah, Jalen Brown
got caught up.
But they had the switch on the one between him and Marcus Smart. Jason Tatum was the bad guy in that situation because he was covering no one.
Well, he got all of a sudden a kid that when Van Vliet came over to that side, then Tatum's like, I'm going to just go. I'll go double team Van Vliet. And then you had OG wide open in the corner.
Yeah.
What a pass, though. You know what the first thing I thought about when he made that pass and he hit that shot was OKC and having Chris Paul with the ball out of bounds to make a play like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Adams, going back to that game, Steven Adams was wide open on that first out of bounds. You know the play I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yep.
Steven Adams all he had to do was lob it over, and Steven Adams is going for a dunk or a layup.
It was a tremendous, tremendous play. And apparently, do you think this is the only game that the Raptors are going to win?
Who are you asking, me or Canty?
Go ahead. Whoever. Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd probably say that's the only game they're going to win in this series. I think it's a five-game series. No disrespect to Toronto. I just don't think they have enough firepower.
I could see them winning one more. I could see Boston closing it out in six.
I think it's going seven.
You think it's going seven?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
All right. And listen, I know. I'm fully aware that playoff basketball is a lot different than regular season. I'm just not going to write them off yet. I'm just not going to do it. I when you have accomplished so much, you're right. You need to have a guy that you can turn to and say, he's the guy, he's the one who's going to get it. And they don't have that right now, but they do have an excellent team and they do have the best coach in the league.
Yeah, but you have to use your eyes too. I mean, you're going on reputation.
Toronto doesn't have any answers for Kemba Walker or Jason Tatum. None. They have no answer for those guys.
That should have never happened.
Are bad.
Yeah, but it's 0.5 seconds. I mean, it's 0.5 seconds left. It's half a second left in that game. Kemba just came off one of the. I mean,
did you see that dish?
Ridiculous, dude.
Tremendous. It's amazing, and Kemba's an unbelievable player. I'm just not writing them off yet. That's all.
Okay. All right.
How about Lou in Manalapan? He's next, 98.7 ESPN. Lou, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Happy Friday. Rick, I kind of hoped, believe it or not, your Islanders could have pulled it off last night. But I wanted to get into this NBA. You know, the difference between these bubble teams and, you know, the Raptors might have been better than the Celtics all year. And what's the other team? What's the other matchup, guys?
Milwaukee, Miami.
And Milwaukee's out of their – they were out of their minds during the regular seasons. But these guys are getting out-coached. How important is coaching? I wanted to ask this to you, Rick, and to you, Chris. How important is coaching in these playoff games? And, the X's and O's just seem to be the difference in the NBA and the NHL.
Look at the NHL. You saw it last night. I mean, AV with another ridiculous challenge. I mean, that would have been the conversation. Yeah. If Philly lost that game, they would have, I mean, Carlin, you were in Philly, they would have crucified him.
That wasn't even close to goalie interference, was it?
It wasn't even close.
And AV drives everyone nuts. I'm a Ranger fan. He drives everyone nuts with sometimes his game management. But it really is the difference. Coaching is the difference. And that's why I, scratch my head at this Nets move. They could have won it above and beyond. And, Steve Nash is cool. I loved him as a player, but what the heck? What does this guy prove? How does he get this job with these stars?
Relationships, you know? Man. Relationships. Yeah, I mean, he's a teammate of Sean Marks, and more importantly, he's worked with Kevin Durant. And, I mean, you can drop all the X's and O's you want. If the guys in that locker room aren't listening, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but what happens when Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are blaming a Hall of Fame point guard that had an amazing career and obviously knows what he's talking about? What happens when they have to blame him?
They can't blame him. They can't blame him because they're the ones that signed off on the hire. There's more pressure on Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to make this work than Steve Nash.
Oh, absolutely.
This is all on those dudes.
Absolutely there is. And you, Chris, I was about to say the exact same thing, that it's, you know, you guys are the ones that made the choice, so you can't point the finger at anybody else.
You already had a playoff coach in Kenny Atkinson. You decided you were going to move on from him, and then you decided, well, Jock Vaughn is nice, and we'll keep him on as an assistant, but we want my guy Steve Nash, who I work with in Golden State. Now, apparently other teams have been trying to get Steve Nash to be their head coach, and Steve Nash didn't see those as the right opportunity for him. But, I mean, they're turning over the keys to a Ferrari to him. And so, yeah, this is an interesting direction that they went with the hire, but I don't think there's as much pressure on Steve Nash as there is on KD and Kyrie in order to deliver and compete at a championship level in Brooklyn.
There's no excuses now. There's no excuses.
Nope. Absolutely.
I don't care. Listen, Carlin, I don't care how smart you are as a coach. I mean, especially with today's athlete, you have to have guys be willing to buy in. And if these two guys needed someone with the credentials of Steve Nash to buy in, then that was what you were going to have to do.
Then it was worth it. So we'll see how I think it's a good hire. I really do, and I know you guys do too. I think it will be interesting. I still think at some point Kyrie's going to be a little bit of a he'll be an issue at some point. It's hard for me to believe that he wouldn't, but We'll see. We'll see. Rick, it's your favorite time. You know what it is? It's Disney's new movie, Mulan.
Oh, yeah.
It is streaming right now. Experience the legend of Mulan as she fights to defend her family and the kingdom. Rick, did you know that approximately 4,000 weapons were made for the film?
Wow.
They were made out of a number of different materials. Some were made out of aluminum, Rick, with urethane handles. Some were soft versions for cast-on-cast fights. And the armory for Mulan included shields for the infantry, spears, bows, arrows, double-edged Jean swords, the broader Dao sword, and the Kapinga dagger with the Bori Khan wields and the fearsome daggers used by the Xianing. All true. Mulan, available right now to Disney Plus subscribers who unlock premiere access.
Why is it the only thing I can get? I cannot get the image of you in a skin tight sailor's outfit out of my mind.
I look like the old wrestler Tugboat.
Exactly.
That guy in a little coat. That guy in a little coat.
Oh, my God.
Oh, horizontally red striped tank top. In moments, what's it going to take to save Dave Gettleman's job? We'll discuss what John Mara had to say about it yesterday. 98.7 ESPN. It was John Mara. He's never going to put a number on wins and losses for Dave Gettleman. But when he says meaningful games in December, I mean, that's always kind of been that marking line for the Giants when they're kind of trying to determine people's fates for the future.
Yeah, but it sets up a tricky dynamic if you're not in that position, if you're Big Blue, because if you're not competing for a playoff spot with the expanded playoffs, then you could be talking about trying to hire a new general manager that doesn't get to pick his head coach. So I just think that the Giants and all the dysfunction that has happened the last 3 or 4 years has put them in a tough spot going into 2020, especially with the lack of an offseason and the lack of having OTAs and mini camps and preseason games.
Rick, I know you'll be looking forward to talking about game one of the next series coming up, the conference finals on Monday.
You are such a bad guy. I'm not saying a word. I'm focused on game seven. I'm going to Popeyes for some chicken.
Game one, nothing? You don't want to?
I got nothing on game one. I'm focused on game seven. The second I'm off this radio, I'm going to go eat a whole bucket of fried chicken to sacrifice the chicken I need to do. This is my fault.
Brian Munguia, Ray Santiago, great job as always. Rule 76.
No excuses. Play like a champion. It's DiPietro, Canty, Carlin, and
everybody
on 98.7 ESPN.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.